But there's no timeouts left because of that last run.
A play fake. Stroud on the move. A good ball. Touchdown! The former Jaguar!
Josh, how much of that Texans-Jaguars game did you actually end up watching?
Not too much. I did see the highlights.
Yep.
I famous highlight of Trevor Lawrence missing Christian Kirk wide open.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
It just doesn't get any better for the Jaguars. Like, it just keeps getting worse somehow.
The team's in hell. It's the worst.
And I don't understand why. Like, they should be good. On paper, they should be really good.
I didn't want to say that they should be good. They should be competent.
Yeah, you're right. They shouldn't be 0-4. They should be maybe 1-3 or 2-2. But they should not be 0-4.
Man, they are frustrating.
Yeah.
Team that you can maybe argue has been a little frustrating, though, has been the Houston Texans. They're 3-1. They haven't really dominated anybody, and that game against Minnesota was kind of eye-opening. Getting more, though, on the Houston Texans. We welcome in on the Western Hotline the sideline reporter for the Houston Texans, John Harris. John, good morning, my friend. How are we doing today?
We're doing all right, boys. How are we doing?
Doing very well. Doing very good. Well. I mean, you know, we're two teams here. You know, we're through a month. We've both, you know, gotten our you-know-whats kicked at least once this year. But, you know, we're making it. We're thriving.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. There are a lot of teams that would love to be 3-1 that aren't. I mean, the Jacksonville Jaguars would love to be 3-1, and they aren't. And I think, you know, kind of hearing you guys as you were bringing me in, you know, this Texans team hasn't played up to the expectation. You know, I've just listened to our local guys talk about it. And they're talking about all the things, you know, what surprised you? Oh, they're not doing this. They're not doing that. They're not doing this. And I'm like, they're 3-1. You know, so at some point, things are going to, you know, click. They're going to stop having games with 12 penalties in a game, which have happened three straight games. They've had 11-plus penalties in three straight games. And they're self-inflicted wounds. And in those three wins, you know, they had a blocked punt that was recovered at the one-yard line against the Colts. You know, they fumbled the ball at the two-yard line going in to take a two-touchdown lead against the Bears. And then last week, Steven Sims, you know, headbutted a punt that the Jaguars were able to get at the one-yard line and score a play later. So have they played well? No, they've not played, you know, probably their C-plus game. But at some point, it's going to come together. And maybe a team like the Bills, you know, pulls it out of them here. And hopefully that's what it is, because I think if they don't, the Bills are going to come in here and win by a couple touchdowns, and that'll be probably the biggest embarrassment that could happen here in the city of Houston.
So you brought up the penalties there, and that's been something I've definitely kept an eye on. Mainly the offensive line and almost specifically Laremy Tunsil. What is going on there?
You know, I wish I had an answer. People have been asking that. People have been asking that same question all week. Like, it's the penalties, it's Laremy. I'm like, you know, I think what makes it so frustrating, you know, is if it's a, you know, a former sixth rounder who makes a couple million a year, like, you know, you kind of excuse it. You're talking about, with Laremy, a guy that makes $25 million a year and doesn't line up right at times. And then he false started. He's been false starting for a long time. He's kind of, that's kind of been his MO. I mean, people have talked about it since the day we traded for him back in 2019, and that was a very polarizing trade. But when he's on the field, he's played at a Pro Bowl level, especially in the pass game. He's been one of the best pass protectors, if not the best, in the league. But this year, he's had a couple breakdowns in pass protection. He had a couple of holdings last week. There are a couple of moments on film where he was basically caught just watching the play, and had he made a block, maybe the play goes for a touchdown, and those kind of things. So fans are starting to kind of – they're wising up like, man, what is going on? And what's happening? And maybe it's a vet that's just taking a little extra time to get ready. Maybe it's a guy that, you know, is still really not right after knee surgery this past offseason. I don't know, but I know it's been very, very frustrating for the people of Houston to know that one of your highest paid players, if not the highest paid right now, is a guy making all these mistakes. He's like third or fourth in the league in penalty yards or whatever the case might be. Like, if you took his penalty yards and made him rushing yards, he'd be like the third leading rusher on our team. That's terrible to think about. So at some point, he's going to find his groove. But the game against Minnesota was an eye-opener. And that was Sean Hockley's crew who called the Ravens-Chiefs game to start. It's like, wait a second. We should know week one. You saw it right there. Ryan Stanley kept getting popped for the same penalty. Like, why aren't we making adjustments? I think that's been frustrating too. So, you know, hopefully – those things will start to slow down. There won't be as many holding penalties. But then again, you got to try and block this Bills front, and that's been difficult when we faced a really good front this year for all five guys to be working in sync and doing the right things.
Yeah, and to go back to that Minnesota game, like Zach mentioned off the top here, it looked like that was like the game, just like the Bills just had against the Ravens, where it's just nothing's working and everything's just breaking down right in front of you. And if you could pin it on one thing, would it be those offensive line penalties, or was it just something else that was just going on in that game where they just the Texans just couldn't really get going?
Well, I think, you know, it starts in the first play of the game. You know, Minnesota's an interesting team to play because they come at you from a lot of different angles. They've got a lot of different blitz schemes. They show a lot of different simulated pressures. And you got to try and figure that out. Well, what they did to us was force our rookie tight end to block John Grenard. I'm like, we should know that a tight end ain't going to block John Grenard. We had John Grenard here for 4 years, and he was fantastic. And we should know that if you're going to put a tight end on him, you're going to lose. Well, the first play of the game, put a tight end on him, and he forced a holding penalty on about a 25-yard pitch and catch between CJ and Nico. Well, now you got to bring it back. Now it's first and 20. So, okay, we're going to run this little hitch route to Tank Dell. And the linebacker, Kamu Grugier-Hill, who was a Texan, so we know he jumps the wrong route. So Tank's wide open. He catches it, turns up the field. It's going to be 12 to 15 yards. And, okay, we're back on schedule. Let's get this thing started. No, defensive lineman tips it all the way over to Kamu Grugier-Hill, who's out of position for an interception. They score a few plays later. And then the day just, you know, dissolves into a bunch of crap. At that point, can't line up right. We had one drive where it's 14-0. We got a first down. We weren't in the red zone. We were close. We get it to third and four. We're okay. We're at least going to kick a field goal, you know, get some points up on the board. Then we went snap infraction, false start, illegal formation, false start. Five straight plays. All find self-inflicted wounds. And that was really the game. And at that point, and the thing about it was, those penalties negated big plays for us. There were two third down conversions we had that got negated because our offensive tackle was lined up 6 inches deeper in the backfield than it should have been. So would we have won the game in Minnesota? Nope. Weren't going to do it. Not that day. It just was not that great a day. But could we have been in that game and made it a lot more difficult had we not shot ourselves in the foot with just inane illegal formation, snap infraction, false start penalties? Yeah, we could have been in that ball game. So just like if you just look at the score of the game the other night against Buffalo and Baltimore, you know Baltimore or Buffalo doesn't have that trick play go awry. Maybe they go put it in and make it 21-17, and now it's a whole different ball game. For us against Minnesota, if we could have had a couple of those things go our way without the penalties early, now all of a sudden that maybe becomes a different game. I don't think we win, just like I don't think Buffalo would have won the other night. But the game would have looked a whole lot different to the public at that point if they hadn't just, you know, locked in and watched the game. And I know you guys probably feel that way too about Buffalo. Like, you know, it's 35-10, and you learn some things that you got to do a little bit better. But, man, that thing goes one play here, one play there, and it's a whole different ballgame in the fourth quarter. I think Minnesota would have been that way. But those penalties, I mean, 12 of them, and the majority of them were all on the offensive line.
Yeah, it was just it was crazy to watch that game as like a neutral, watching it on red zone, and they would go back and like, oh, it's another penalty on Houston, and yep. Scott Hansen even at a certain point kind of it felt like he threw his hands up and goes, I think I'm seeing it correctly, but it feels wrong. It was just it was definitely an eye-opening game to watch. John, though, I feel like we've been burying the lead here. You know, you know, you're listening to a Buffalo station here. It is Stephon Diggs week. He is second in receptions so far through four games with the Texans at 25. Nico Collins leading the way at 30. Drastically different, though, in terms of yards. Nico Collins is almost at 500 yards. Diggs is just under 240. What have you seen from Diggs so far? Not only just to start the year, but in training camp as well. I know there was a Jeremy Fowler piece that came out this morning over on ESPN. I mean, he's a talking point basically since he's been traded from the Bills, and honestly, even before that.
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, and I know you guys, you know, probably felt this with, you know, in Buffalo. I mean, I love Steph. I mean, Steph has been a lot to our team, and in large part because, you know, our team's got a lot of quiet guys. Like you brought up Laramie. Like, Laramie's a captain, but Laramie doesn't say much. I mean, you're lucky to get 10 words out of Laramie. He's just not he doesn't talk much. You know, CJ does a lot of talking for the offense, but at some point you need somebody else to step in and go, hey, we need to get in line. And I've seen that from Steph since he got here. There was a practice back in training camp, I remember. Offense, like three straight, we should have seen this coming. Three straight, they had two botched snaps and then a fumble, like three straight plays. And I haven't seen this in Houston in a long time. And Steph stepped out there and was like, what the bleep, offense? Let's get our bleep together. And it was like they kind of snapped two, and then the next couple series, they look pretty good in practice. Like, okay, he just gives them a little bit of fire that they really haven't had. Now, as far as production goes, I mean, I think he's got, what would you guys say, 25? I mean, he's on pace for 100 catches. Mm-hmm. It's not right now where he's getting the big yardage because, you know, Nico is having those opportunities. But a big, huge play the other day was in the fourth quarter on the last drive, that the game-winning drive. We run a dagger route, and Steph is the clear-out guy. So two guys go with Steph down the field and opens up that window for Nico. And I think what's going to happen is at some point teams are going to start saying, look, we got to take away Nico, and they're going to, all right, we're going to live one-on-one with Steph. Well, Steph will just kill him at that point because he's still got that route-running ability. He still can get open against anybody, and he's still finding that way with C.J. Stroud, and they're all kind of finding this way together. Even Tank Dell. Tank Dell's production has been down because Stephon and Nico have been kind of they've been in the crosshairs really and been open. They've gotten themselves open. And I thought this when Steph got here, because of Nico, because of Tank, but Steph would, I don't want to turn into a slot receiver, but he was going to do a lot of things that slot receivers do. Find those little areas, find those little nooks and crannies, get open, and Seven will find you. And really, that's kind of what it's been. But he's given us a little different element. He's doing a lot of motion, a lot of shifts. He has the halfback or the throwback pass to Dare against the Vikings. Last week, he was going to throw it back to CJ, and he runs it in, his first rushing touchdown ever. So he's given us a little different element than maybe people thought. But when you see Nico's production, a decent part of that has to do with the fact that Steph is on the field. That teams can't just all of a sudden roll all that coverage to Nico and take him away because Steph's there. So it hasn't gotten to the A-plus level where we hope it's going to get. Part of that was because Tank was out last week. But you're starting to see some of that passing game synergy really start to show itself with Steph, with Nico, and with CJ. And really right now, CJ's throwing the open guy, but Nico's open a lot because Steph is on the field.
I do want to get to the Texans running game because you mentioned Stephon Diggs having that rushing touchdown. I do, though, for just a minute, talk about how amazing Nico Collins is and really his ascension. You know, his first 2 years, you can argue, you know, quarterback and everything like that, but, you know, wasn't even a 500-yard receiver. Last year, he exploded on the scene along with, of course, C.J. Stroud. This year, man, John, he looks like one of the top five receivers in football. He is just a man amongst boys a lot of the time. It's early, but he looks like he's going to be a guy that's like a 1,500, 1,600-yard receiver this year, even with Stephon Diggs and Tank Dell, you know, a part of that wide receiver room.
I think what's fascinating, you guys have probably seen this from Bills players over the years or wherever you've been, and you meet a guy and you're like, that's the nicest guy, man. Oh, he's such a sweetheart. Oh, my gosh. And then on the field, like, oh, my God, that's not Nico. Like, that's a different dude. Like, it's Nico off the field. It's like Mr. Collins on the field. And to me, that was really what kind of started it in 2023. It was like he went to a different level, like mentally. He really became a guy after the catch that you didn't want to tackle. Like, we noticed it early in the 23 season. Like, when Nico gets the ball and starts running, dudes are getting out of the way. Like, he's running guys over. Like, there's a different mentality that he had when he got the ball in his hands. And then that was starting to open some things up for him. He started getting some confidence. They started throwing in bubble screens and now screens and those things so he could get the ball in his hands and run the ball. Because when he gets vertical with the ball, like, dang, that dude is a beast. And he's really kind of taken that to a different level. And I thought a great example of how the growth of Nico, we play the Bears on Sunday night, and the last play of the first quarter, he gets a 15-yard penalty because Tyreek Stevenson came and stuck his finger in the face mask, like right in the eye of Nico Collins. Of course, naturally, you're like, get off me, man. Like, he's poking him in the forehead, and Nico's like, get off me. And, of course, he gets banged for the 15-yard penalty. And I can see, I watched the whole break for the second quarter. And Nico is just, I can see him stewing. I'm like, man, throw him the ball. And the very first play, Tyreek Stevenson jabs him right in the face again. And I'm like, okay, he's now Mr. Collins, because he caught the slant route, turned up field, and Jalen Johnson hit him at about the 3-yard line. And Nico just barrel rolled him into the end zone. And as they got up, he just instinctively shoved Johnson off him, like, get off me. And you could see Johnson like, yo, I messed with the wrong dude. And that's where Nico has really just changed the mentality. He really has given us like a physical mindset. He's like almost a defensive player out on the field. And everything else has cleaned up. And then you look at him, you're like, that dude's 6'4", 215, and guys don't want to tackle him. So at some point, teams are going to have to start taking him away and just say, all right, Stephon Diggs and Tank Dell, you're going to beat us, because today number 12 is just not going to beat us. It's just not going to happen. And I know we'll get to the run game. If the run game gets better, then you're not going to see as much too high. Then you know, maybe you can have all three of them really contributing, because teams are fearful of the run game, but that just hasn't been the case. But right now, Nico is in some kind of groove, and with Stroud throwing the football, the ball can just be in a perfect spot. You can have great coverage, and that ball is going to be in a perfect spot, or CJ is going to put it in a spot where Nico can go moss a guy and pick it off the top of his head like he's done plenty of times the last couple of years. So he's really developed as a receiver with Ben McDaniels, receivers coach. Bobby Sloat came in. That was the first thing he told Nico, like, you catch the ball, you get upfield, you turn it to a running back, don't play around anymore. And he really took that to heart, and I think that's really made him one of the top receivers in the league right now.
Yeah, he has absolutely become one of my favorite. I loved the comparing almost like to a defensive player. He does kind of remind me, him, A.J. Brown, D.K. Metcalf, the big guys, yep, of like the old school safeties, like the Ed Reeds, the Brian, yep, Dawkins of, they will just hit you as hard as humanly possible, and you just got to deal with it. He is a lot of fun to watch, though. But on the run game, Joe Mixon, Cam Akers, they have been the two guys. Damian Pierce, I think a lot of people liked him the last few years. Nothing really going in the preseason. Although nothing really going yet in the run game anyways. Akers is a great story, especially when he's in the Rams, coming back from, I believe it was an Achilles injury, as fast as he did. And then, of course, Joe Mixon, years with the Bengals. What have you seen, though, so far from this? I think they're 19th in the league in terms of rushing yards per game, still over 100 yards per game. What have you seen so far, and what gives you kind of, I guess, confidence that it could get going eventually?
Oh, I'm not sure I have confidence, yeah, right now in this run game. Now, I do say this. You know, Joe played a quarter and a half, or I'm sorry, a game and a half, because he got hurt, I think, early in the third or late in the second against the Bears. Now, we weren't running it really, really well against the Bears, but Joe gives that offensive line just a different identity. I mean, they know with Joe that they just have got to fire off and get a hat on somebody, and Joe is going to be right behind him. There is no slow reading. I mean, Joe is right behind them. So against the Colts, offensive line did a good job. They knew where everybody was. They got a hat on a hat, and Joe just turned up. And when the two safeties have 27 tackles between them, you know your run game has done some good things. We thought that would continue, because we've always seen that Colts front as being really, really good. I think the Colts front's proven it's not as good. And our guys up front have not blocked exceedingly well. But we've not played with Joe Mixon. And I think Joe, you know, look, Joe's not the Joe of old, but Joe is not old. So they've got to get him involved back in this offense. And my hope is that, A, we'll see Joe on Sunday. And B, I think he'll give them a little bit more physical element that they're not going to get from the other backs. And also, not only do we have Joe down, we have Damian down. So both guys were out. So we went to Cam, a guy still coming back from Achilles surgery, and he's done some decent things. But I think Cam as the secondary back, with Joe as the number one back, if you give Joe, you know, 17 to 18 touches and Cam gets 8 to 10, that's the sweet spot where you want to be. But that's not where we are, because Joe has been banged up. So hopefully we will get Joe back, and that front can start kind of getting back in a groove of blocking for Joe. And Joe, sometimes at 220 pounds, Joe blocks for himself. And sometimes that offensive line needs a little extra to have a guy that blocks for himself. And so hopefully that's what we get. But it has been the every time anybody on radio or somebody in the media writes about the run game, it's just, God, come on, man. This thing needs to be a lot better than it's been. And when it does get better, I'm assuming it's going to get better. Then I think you can get everybody involved in the offense the way you want to, and this machine can get – I mean, it could be a machine. The game against the Colts, I didn't even think we played all that well. We had 430 yards, 200-something plus rushing, and 200-something plus passing. It's like, man, that's going to be tough for teams to deal with. But since then, I mean, we had 100 last week, and it was Steph's run, CJ's scrambles. I think we had – Dari Ogunbowale had a couple of runs, you know, as a third down back, you know, third long situations. We just haven't been able to do it like we did that first game. And I don't know if we can get back to that, at least until Joe gets back there. And hopefully with Joe, we can get back to levels of 140, 150 each week, which will open things up for all those receivers again.
And kind of like as we, you know, went in and dissected different parts of the offense there, zooming out and looking at it as a whole, I've been looking at the last four games for the Texans here, and in the three wins, the best margin of victory was only 6 points. Like, even though the offense has really been clicking and doing well, why do you think it's been such close victories so far here? And obviously in the loss, too, you only put up a touchdown. So it's like, what's the roadblock there? Because the numbers look great, but it's just not translating to the scoreboard? Or what's going on there, you think?
I mean, I think there are a couple things. Number one, you know, against the Colts, you know, we scored 29 points against the Colts, but we had a punt block. Then ends up balls at the 1 yard line. So the Colts score, boom, right there. Then against the Bears, Cam Akers, we're at the 2 yard line. We're going to take a 2-touchdown lead in the fourth quarter. Cam fumbles. Against the Jaguars last week, Steven Sims, our punt returner, decided he wanted to look like Lionel Messi and headbutt the punt, and they get the ball at the 1 yard line. Well, those are, you know, you just add takeaway touchdowns that we gave away, add the Cam Akers touchdown. And you're talking about 2 touchdown wins in each of those games. And it's really 3 plays. Now, can I say that we've played extremely well? No, I wouldn't say that. But I think there's been a lot of expectations. You obviously add Steph into the mix and Joe Mixon into the mix. And then you've not had Mixon for the last 2.5 games, basically. So you've kind of adapted to that. I think we ran into a buzzsaw in Minnesota. I can promise you that. And like I said earlier, our offensive line penalties that day completely cost us the game. Now, if we decide that we're going to go in there and putz around against the Buffalo Bills, we'll lose 45-14. And we'll be embarrassed wearing our new uniforms and our new helmet because that's what we're doing. We're wearing a brand-new helmet that people have been talking about for months. We're wearing a brand-new jersey that the players love. So it's like a big day. It's repping H-Town day. It's like a huge day. So if we go out there and step all over ourselves like we've been at times, then we're gonna walk out of there with a huge egg on our face, you know? So hopefully the Bills are the type of team that can bring out a little bit more greatness. And the other part of it, too, is I think our second-half offense has got to be much better. We have not done much in the second half. And it was like the other day against the Jaguars, it was like we kind of just like, all right, whatever. Oh, guys, we got to go win the game with 2:45 left. And like, okay, we're good. But there have been penalties just killing the ends of every drive. We had a chance the other day, we had 20-17. Dari Ogunbowale has a huge third down catch. He gets 31 yards. We're in field goal range. We're at least going to tie it. Holding penalty, incomplete pass, sack. We're out of field goal range. So, you know, there's just been times where we can, you know, go put teams away, like against the Bears on Sunday night. Cam Akers just got to run it in. There's a hole. He's got to run it in. One guy punches it out, and we end up winning that game by 6 instead of by 2 touchdowns. So it's kind of been disjointed, but I'm, you know, look around the league. I don't think there are many teams around the league that would say, oh, yeah, we played our A game. I mean, even the Chiefs. We're looking at that today. The Chiefs have got 4 wins. Large margin of victory is 7. Everybody's going, what's wrong with the Chiefs? I'm like, man, I'll take what's wrong with the Chiefs. So I think there have been, the Minnesota game notwithstanding, you know, we found a way to win. We ran into a buzzsaw in Minnesota, and on that day we decided that we were going to false start all game, and that just took us out of it from the beginning. So, yeah, we haven't hit our stride, and I think a lot of teams would say that. I think a lot of teams, you look up at the end of the year and go, man, that team is really, really good. You can look back at those first 4 games and go, man, what the hell were they doing in those first 4 games? And it could be even these 2 teams playing, Buffalo and Houston, that at the end of the year look up and go, man, we're playing so much better at the end of the year than we did at the beginning of the year. Because both teams are still adapting to life in a different manner. Josh is in Buffalo is dealing with, you know, life without Steph. And I know that whole thing, and, you know, he's got receivers that, you know, he talked about the other day, don't worry about stats or whatever. You know, we're dealing with life. How do you incorporate Steph into this offense and make it all work? How do you incorporate Joe Mixon into this offense and make it all work? And I think these NFL teams are like finely tuned Italian sports cars. A little widget is off, they're going to be off. And I think that's the way that we are. When our widgets are all working, we can get 145 in our Lamborghini and go. And that we're not quite there yet because we're not hitting on all cylinders. I think we saw what happens when Buffalo does hit on all cylinders. That game against Jacksonville, they just completely embarrassed them. And I think last week against Baltimore, I think Baltimore is a good enough team to be able to take that away from the Bills a little bit. So how do you respond? So I think both teams really have got something to prove on Sunday, which I think makes this game really exciting on both ends. Like, hey, which team is going to show up? And then which team is going to compete in the second half to go try and win this thing?
Absolutely love it. Cannot wait. I actually completely forgot about the H-Town uniforms, too.
I'm excited to see those.
Those are really cool. I like those a lot. John, man, thank you so much for giving us so much of your time this morning. Enjoy the game on Sunday, and enjoy the Houston Astros game coming up here in just a few hours as well. Elimination game should be a lot of fun.
Oh, God, you're killing me, man. They played so badly yesterday, but hopefully they can get it done, because if I got to hear from Sal about the Yankees, it is going to drive me absolutely insane. So can't get eliminated today. And hopefully we'll meet up with the Yankees later in the ALCS. That would be kind of nice. That'd be fun.
There you go, man. John, enjoy the rest of your day, and thanks for jumping out with us.
Of course, boys. Appreciate it. Thank you.
That was John Harris there on the Western Hotline, the sideline reporter of the Houston Texans. Yeah, the Astros did not play well yesterday.
But no.
I was glued to that game for really the entirety of it. Because the Tigers, I had forgotten that they were even in the playoffs. Like, they were just a complete afterthought.
They came out of nowhere, too. They had like a 2% chance to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, it was just, yep, here they are.
Dangerous wild card teams.
Exactly.
They're there in baseball.
Exactly. Also, these uniforms, I'm looking at them right now.
Yeah. I forgot how much I liked them.
I really like them. They look good.
803-0550 is the number to call. Brian, we'll get your call after a quick timeout. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR.
Awaits the direct snap. And pitches to Allen. Got traffic. And the ball's knocked out. It's a fumble. It's a live ball picked up by Kyle Hamilton of Baltimore. So Buffalo went to the tricks.
That was the trick play from Sunday night, and that was the worst call on the field. But one of the worst calls you could make is to skip your recommended cancer screenings. To learn more about potential life-saving cancer screenings, recommendations, and guidelines, visit roswellpark.org/screening. That play call, Josh, I will tell you real quick on this.
I can't stop thinking about it. I really...
That's fair.
It's Wednesday, and it's still just... Again, like I said, I was in the other room and I walked in and I said, why is Curtis Samuel under center? What is happening? And then boom, all of a sudden it all just falls apart.
It all just went to hell.
Yeah.
I will tell you though, as somebody, so I work the Bills games. I'm, you know, in the chair when the games are going on and I'm listening to the radio broadcast. I don't get to visualize it as often. But I have that like about 15 to 20 second delay.
Yeah.
And I hear it's a fumble. And I'm like, oh, all right, damn, all right. Like, let's get everything ready. Okay, all right. But I always do like to then, of course, see the play.
Right.
And I watch it. I'm like, this is so much worse than I was thinking of. I'm like, everything is awful.
Because if you're listening to the radio, it probably just sounded like, oh, yep, there's a fumble. Oh, well.
It's a fumble. It kind of sounded chaotic. I did not hear the part that Curtis Samuel's under center. So to me, it just sounded like, oh, no, what happened? This is not great. And then I watch it. And I'm like, everything is so much worse. This is terrible. Oh, what a game. What a game.
It, you know what? As long as that play doesn't ever happen again, I'm fine. I'm fine.
We didn't get to say it a lot yesterday, but on trick plays, the ones I like is, again, Detroit ran effectively this Philly special.
Yeah.
I like when a team kind of doesn't really know something's happening. It does feel like the Bills, the last few trick plays they've called, everyone's pointing at the screen going, what's happening?
Yeah.
What's going on there?
Hey, guys, look, DeMar Hamlin's out on the punt. What's going to happen?
Yeah, it's that, or, hey, Josh Allen's a wide receiver. I wonder what he's going to do.
Right.
I wonder what's going to happen there. It just, I don't love how they look all the time. I know a lot of fans do love trick plays. I oftentimes can't stand them. I am somebody that, like, if a team calls a trick play, I'm like, you got them. Because the team has to pull that out of their hat.
Oh, right.
I'm like, you've got him.
No,
this game's over. And that's always how I felt.
It depends on the scenario, because I remember specifically a fake punt that Dable pulled off in 2020, maybe. I think it was Isaiah McKenzie that
2019 and 2020 felt like that was when Dable was in his bag. Devin Singletary, like touchdown throws. And, yeah.
But I think it was McKenzie that did this one. And I just remember watching it going, yeah. Like, it was the feeling of, oh, you got him, but in the other way. In the sense of, like, ha, the Bills have this game in hand, no problem. The other team, I don't remember who they were playing, but it's the other team doesn't know what to do, and we're just playing with them at this point because we should have punted this here, and we just got a free play out of it and a free first down.
That is totally fair. It's just, for me, it's always how I've been. Like, even especially when I'm, like, watching college football, which I think everyone knows I'm a massive college football fan.
Mm-hmm.
I see anyone pull out a trick play, and I'm like, what are we doing here, guys? Let's be a serious program here. Like, what are we doing? And it's not fair. It's like, I know it's a contradiction.
If you could,
like,
pull
even
off,
if it works, I'm like, ew.
If you could successfully pull off a trick play, you are a serious program.
The only trick play I allow, and I don't even think it counts, is a flea flicker.
No, it doesn't.
Flea flickers are the best.
It does not count, though.
They are the best.
But it is the best. But they don't count. Because you know how many, at first, when they first came about.
I'm not going to fight you on that one, because I kind of agree.
When they first came about, yes, it was a trick play, because it was new, and it was fun, and it was, what's happening, how do I defend this? Now it's just like, oh, look, they're doing this play that we've seen a million times. Let's go out and shut it down real fast. Or fail.
Or fail.
It still does happen.
Man, we need more flea flickers in football. I think that's where I'm going to end this part of the conversation, is
not
I need to see more.
Not for the Bills.
No, I would totally say that. No. I would not totally say that. I think there should be mandatory.
No.
Across the NFL, Stop. At least one team needs to try to pull it off every week.
No.
I don't care what it is, Thursday, Sunday, I don't care. At least one of you guys has to do it. So be prepared Monday Night Football if no one's done it. One of you two is doing it.
It's going to happen every week. It would be Monday Night Football has to do it. Because no one else wants to do it.
Everyone push it off and go, nah, they'll do it.
Someone will do it. The Bears will take care of it.
Oh, could you imagine then, like, the halftime talk with the coaches? Be like, hey, no team's pulled off the flea flicker yet. When is it coming, guys? Like, it has to happen.
And now the coin toss no longer becomes for kickoff. It becomes who has to do the flea flicker.
Who has to do the flea flicker at some point. That is easily my favorite play of football. It's so stupid. Every time it gets pulled off, though, like, I immediately, like, have an audible cheer. Even before it happens, I'll see, like, the running back stop and pitch it back, and I'm like, oh, here we go!
Is this how you feel about the triple option?
No, I hate the triple option.
Okay, well, that doesn't make any sense.
Watching, like, 2010 Georgia Tech was a fever dream. Them and, like, Navy now.
That I was going to say, because, like, you see this in, like, every Army-Navy game. It's just triple option after triple option. But, like,
I hate that game most years. I love the pageantry, and then the game starts, and I'm like, this is disgusting.
But being a fan of the flea flicker, like, wouldn't you like the idea of
option? No, I like deep passes.
That's fair. It's not... But...
I love watching a defense absolutely lose its mind because everything has gone wrong and the offense just scores an easy touchdown. It's a lot of fun for me. With that being said, though, real quick point on this, because I do want to get to calls here. The Army-Navy game this year...
could actually mean something.
It's going to be awesome.
Yeah. It's going to be great.
And here's the thing, Josh. This may not happen, but it potentially could. Army-Navy for the American Conference Championship, Army-Navy game the next week. Very much in play.
Oh.
Very much in play. They're not independents. They're in the American Conference.
I didn't even think about that.
That is very much in play.
So they could play back-to-back, and then...
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And that could be a spot for the college football playoff.
The final spot in the playoff.
Yeah.
Please let this
happen. Right? I'm all in. Let's get connected to our fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. We go to Brian here on the line. Brian, how are we doing today?
Hey, guys. So on this Devontae Adams trade, I don't understand Bills fans' mentality. Like, why do we have to run this idea of everyone eats into the ground? Like, we have to wait till January in the playoffs and watch Allen struggle throwing passes on the sidelines before we go, I guess we did need more weapons. And the names that are being thrown out here is, like, potential levers for the Bills to pull. Like, Dalton Kincaid. Sorry, we're 20 games in. He looks like a possession tight end. Just say the truth. Like, this whole idea that he's going to suddenly get down the field like Gronk was in his prime, it hasn't happened yet. You haven't seen one pass like that in his career. He's made some nice catches, some reliable hands, but he's a possession tight end. Curtis Samuel, I'm listening to Brady talk yesterday. Yep, I'm going to get him involved. I got to get him involved. To me, he looks like the next Isaiah McKenzie, Deontay Hardy, Nyheim Hines. I mean, we talk about all we see so far is he lines up in the backfield, he runs some orbit motion, and he catches a bubble screen. I don't know where in his past has he ever demonstrated that, yep, that guy is going to be, he's going to give you top level production or even like moderate production. 1 year of 800 yards. So that's not really an answer. I mean, do I really have to wait for Mac Hollins to be a Gabe Davis replacement and, you know, somewhere like, okay, look, late career explosion from a 31-year-old who's a journeyman at best. And then you have, okay, well, what about Keon Coleman? Yeah, what about him? Everything is a contested catch right now. It's not to write off his whole career, but you're going to bank on that come playoff time? What mindset are we? Do we have a growth mindset here? Because what mindset allows you to go, yep, there's a super talented receiver on the market, and you know Josh Allen's in year seven now, but nah, we don't want him. He's a little too old for us. He's not quite in his prime, even though reception perceptions numbers say that he's still in the 90th percentile, separating from zone and man. But nah, he's too good for us. I mean, we've done too much winning, so we don't need that here in Buffalo. I just don't need to try and convince myself that these guys can become anything more than what they've shown. I mean, you're doing the same thing with the Sabres. You're just banking on this growth that you've never really seen, banking on yourselves. I mean, I guess we can wait all the way to the end and then realize, oh, that's why Ja'Marr Chase gets paid. And, oh, I guess that's why Nico Collins is a tear. But not for us in Buffalo. We're going to wait for Dalton Kincaid to become Travis Kelce. I just think it's a stupid idea. I think Allen is forced to do a lot of things by himself in these big games. Not everyone, obviously, the low games, yep, he can win and you can just spread it around. But in big games, I think the Ravens gave you a picture of a playoff future. That's what it looks like. Allen scrambling for his life, running for his life, looking for someone to throw to. And I don't know why you have to try and live that way, because we have a Rudy Rudiger obsession in this town to always try and win with underdogs in seventh round and undrafted picks. At some point, man, Allen's going to be frustrated trying to play with this as the only superstar. You shut down James Cook, the Bills stop, because there's nowhere else to go with the ball.
Yeah, Brian, thanks for the call. I think you're right on a lot of those points. The Kincaid one is concerning because they have tried to go and get premium assets at wide receiver or really skill position players. James Cook, you brought up there right at the end. He's had a very good year, at least to start to the year. Didn't really do much against Baltimore. They really abandoned the run quite early. Coleman, I was never really a huge fan of the pick. I've liked so far what I've seen, but yeah, you can argue a lot of it has just been contested catch, not really getting a ton of separation. The drop as well against the Ravens was really rough because that was a perfect throw. It was eerily reminiscent to the Diggs drop in the playoffs against Kansas City. Curtis Samuel, it almost feels like now, and I say this kind of jokingly, but it also is incredibly frustrating, there is a player every season we go into the year thinking, man, he's going to be kind of like this like witch gadget guy that's just, you know, never going to know what they're going to do with him. And it's ultimately not much, whether it be Nyheim Hines or Isaiah McKenzie or now Curtis Samuel. It does kind of feel like that is just a thing that they do every year where they get excited and it falls apart. The one for me, though, that is concerning and where I thought this could work, and I still think it can, is Khalil Shakir, which he has shown out to be very, very good. I'm very happy with what I've seen from him. I think the Bills are thrilled, by the way, as well, has been Kincaid. I think that was a lot of the anticipation for this year was they'll have the elite talents. They'll have potentially two of them, an elite slot receiver in Khalil Shakir and a top five tight end in Dalton Kincaid. To Brian's point, I think you're kind of seeing, though, after 20 games, he's a possession tight end. You know, we ran through his stats yesterday, 13 catches, 132 yards, and a touchdown through four games. I get they haven't had to use him a lot in two of the games. You could even argue three because Baltimore gets away from you really early. But you know, Shakir has had zero problems being one of the top wide receivers in EPA. Keon Coleman led the Bills in receiving yards and receptions in week one, and then in Sunday had himself also a nice game. We've yet to see Dalton Kincaid really have that game. And I think even as possession tight end, you're kind of starting to wonder too, like, all right, but that's how most of the team runs. Why isn't he getting open faster? He was the first round pick. He was the guy that they were talking about as a receiving tight end. Look at him more as a receiver. Now, on the Davante Adams thing, for me, though, I do get thrown off by the 32 years old. I don't like that. I don't want the Bills to keep going to older, used talents. I want them to draft their own. That's where my frustration has been, of them constantly waiting, not even doing a little trade up to go get somebody. And that's where also the frustration with Dalton Kincaid comes in, because that seemingly was going to be the guy. And it really has never even gotten close to materializing up to this point.
I think the point, though, is if you go and get a Davante Adams, or this offseason you go sign a free agent wide receiver that might be on a little bit of the older side, you can get these rental players for like the next 2 or 3 years, as long as you keep drafting in the early rounds for offensive talent. If you just kind of, you know, give yourself a little bit of a buffer with these veteran receivers over the next 2-3 years, while building up this young group, not this young group, but just whoever it may be, that I think is the main goal, because you're not going to get that production out of a young wide receiver right away. So you're going to have to kind of supplement that with an older guy like a Davante Adams, like an Amari Cooper.
I think you can, though. And that's my frustration, is we're seeing every year a rookie receiver or two or three immediately come in and are producing.
Right, but that's a one or two or three. If you're the Bills and you draft, let's say, in the second round or the third round this year, you draft Troy Franklin, right? And obviously he hasn't done much of anything at all.
I was going to say, that almost already seems like a miss for Denver.
But at the same time, Denver's figuring out its own problems. If you put him in a system like Buffalo where it's already ready to go, you have the quarterback, you have the offense, everything like that, that's a guy you can kind of sit there and let cook for a little bit and get a veteran receiver to supplement yourself until he's ready. And now, like I said, that's in the third or fourth round, so you would want someone in the first or second. But even looking at this year, Brian Thomas Jr. has looked great so far, but is he good enough to say, yeah, we don't need that veteran guy, we just have this guy here, let's plug him in and we're ready to go.
And go for it. It does kind of seem like you're always, unless you are the Bengals with Chase or Nico Collins with the Texans, or you know, there's a few other guys as well, you're always going to be kind of wanting more. I want to see if this fails or not, because I do think this is the way the league is going, and we do have to see it out. By the way, Adams won't even be traded until the deadline anyways. It's not coming up, you know, tomorrow, what have you. 803-0550 is the number to call. I've got to take a quick timeout. When we come back, we'll wrap up today's show. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR. Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. It is brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. We've been getting connected to our fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Last one for today. Jimmy tweets in. This is kind of just about the idea of trading for a wide receiver. Who would you want, if any, for the Bills to trade for? He brought up the idea initially of maybe a Darnell Mooney on this team, maybe for free agency. He's done pretty well with Atlanta so far. Some of his trade options, though: Diontae Johnson, Davante Adams, and Amari Cooper. I like the Diontae Johnson one, though.
That one's a sneaky one. I really
wonder if Carolina's going to try to keep him, because he really has been their passing offense, with Xavier Leggett kind of trying to figure out his way, but with Andy Dalton's been much, much better. And then he did say honorable mention, and this is something I have thought about for years, but absolutely this ship has sailed. Was hoping for the Bills would be more aggressive on trading for Terry McLaurin. He didn't seem happy last year, but things are starting to look up in Washington. That ship has probably sailed as well. I think that's absolutely true. But McLaurin has been a guy I've always kind of thought teams should be in for potentially trading for, because you knew how good he was, but you knew how bad the Washington system was. And so it was kind of the idea of, like, I think you can go get him. Now, though, with how good Jalen Daniels has been, that's done and over with at this point. I mean, they're going to be building around those two going forward. That's going to do it for me and Josh today. We'll be back on tomorrow for another 10 to 12 Extra Point Show. Coming up, though, after a quick timeout, Sabres Live. Sabres getting their season going on Friday in Prague against the New Jersey Devils. You're listening to WGR.